And this is?
Zia cursed. She wedged herself between Amos and Leonid.
He is one of the Russians. Why is he here?
Calm down, I told her. He's a friend. I explained about Leonid's appearance at the dance. Leonid tried to help, but he kept slipping into Russian.
Wait, Amos said. Let's make this easier.
He touched Leonid's forehead.
Medwa.
In the air above us, the hieroglyph for speak burned red.
There, Amos said. That should help.
Leonid's eyebrows shot up.
You speak Russian?
Amos smiled.
Actually, for the next few minutes, we'll all be speaking ancient Egyptian, but it will sound to each of us like our native tongue.
Brilliant, I said. Leonid, you'd best make the most of your time. Leonid took off his army cap and fidgeted with the brim.
Sarah Jacoby and her lieutenant, Kwai, they mean to attack you.
We know that,
Amos said dryly.
No, you don't understand.
Leonid's voice trembled with fear.
They are evil. They are working with Apophis.
Perhaps it was a coincidence, but when he said that name, several figurines on the world map sparked and melted. My heart felt much the same way. Hold on, I said. Leonid, how do you know this? His ears turned pink.
After the death of Menshikov, Jacoby and Kwai came to our gnome. We gave them refuge. Soon, Jacoby took over, but my comrades did not object. They, hate the Canes very much.
He looked at me guiltily.
After you broke into our headquarters last spring, well, the other Russians blame you for Menshikov's death and the rise of Apophis. They blame you for everything.
Quite used to that, I said. You didn't feel the same? He pinched his oversized cap.
I saw your power. You defeated the Jezuhiru monster. You could have destroyed me, but you didn't. You did not seem evil.
Thanks for that.
After we met, I became curious. I began reading old scrolls, learning to channel the power of the god Chu.
I have always been a good air elementalist.
Amos grunted.
That took courage, Leonid. Exploring the path of the gods on your own in the middle of the Russian gnome. You were brave.
I was foolhardy.
Leonid's forehead was damp with sweat.
Jacoby has killed magicians for lesser crimes. One of my friends, an old man named Mikhail, he once made the mistake of seeing all Canes might not be bad. Jacoby arrested him for treason. She gave him to Kwai, who does magic with lightning. Terrible things. I heard Mikhail screaming in the dungeon for 3 nights before he died.
Amos and Zia exchanged grave looks. I had a feeling this wasn't the first time they'd heard about Kwai's torture methods.
I'm so sorry,
Amos said.
But how can you be sure Jacoby and Kwai are working for Apophis?
The young Russian glanced at me for reassurance. You can trust Amos, I promised. He'll protect you.
Leonid chewed his lip. Yesterday, I was in one of the chambers deep under the hermitage, a place I thought was secret. I was studying a scroll to summon Shu, very forbidden magic. I heard Jacoby and Kwai approaching, so I hid. I overheard the two of them speaking, but their voices were splintered. I don't know how to explain.
They were possessed?
Zia asked.
Worse, Leonid said. They were each channeling dozens of voices. It was like a war council. I heard many monsters and demons, and presiding over the meeting was one voice, deeper and more powerful than the rest. I had never heard anything like it, as if darkness could speak.
Apophis,
Amos said. Leonid had gone very pale.
Please understand, most magicians in St. Petersburg, they are not evil. They are only scared and desperate to survive. Jacoby has convinced them she will save them. She has misled them with lies. She says the Canes are demons. But she and Kwai, they are the monsters. They are no longer human. They have set up a camp at Abu Simbel. From there, they will lead the rebels against the first gnome.
Amos turned to his map. He traced his finger south along the River Nile to a small lake.
I sense nothing at Abu Simbel. If they're there, they've managed to hide themselves completely from my magic. They are there, Leonid promised. Zaya scowled.
Under our very noses, within easy striking distance. We should have killed the rebels at Brooklyn House when we had the chance.
Amos shook his head.
We are servants of Maat, order and justice. We don't kill our enemies for things they might do in the future.
And now our enemies will kill us,
Zaya said. On the table map, two more figurines sparked and melted in Spain. A miniature ship broke into pieces off the coast of Japan. Amos grimaced.
More losses.
He chose a cobra figurine from Korea and pushed it toward the shipwreck. He swept away the melted magicians from Spain. What is that map? I asked. Zia moved a hieroglyph token from Germany to France.
Iskandar's war map. As I once told you, he was an expert at statuary magic.
I remembered. The old chief lector had been so good he'd made a replica of Zia herself, but I decided not to bring that up. Those tokens stand for actual forces, I guessed.
Yes, Amos said. The map shows us our enemies' movements, at least most of them. It also allows us to send our forces by magic to where they are needed.
And, how are we doing? His expression told me all I needed to know.
We're spread too thin,
Amos said.
Jacobi's followers strike wherever we are weakest.
Apophis sends his demons to terrorize our allies. The attacks seem coordinated.
Because they are,
Leonid said. Quai and Jacobi are under the serpent's control. I shook my head in disbelief. How could Quai and Jacobi be so stupid? Don't they understand Apophis is going to destroy the world?
Chaos is seductive, Amos said. No doubt Apophis has made them promises of power. He whispers in their ears, convincing them they are too important to be destroyed. They believe they can make a new world better than the old, and the change is worth any price, even mass annihilation.
I couldn't grasp how anyone could be so deluded, but Amos spoke as if he understood. Of course, Amos had been through this. He'd been possessed by Set, god of evil and chaos. Compared to Apophis, Set was a minor nuisance, but he'd still been able to turn my uncle, one of the most powerful magicians in the world, into a helpless puppet. If Carter and I hadn't defeated Set and forced him to return to the Duat, well, the consequences wouldn't have been pretty. Zia picked up a falcon figurine. She moved it toward Abu Simbel, but the little statue began to steam. She was forced to drop it.
They've put up powerful wards, she said. We won't be able to eavesdrop. They will attack in 3 days,
Leonid said.
At the same time, Apophis will rise. At dawn, on the autumn equinox.
Another equinox, I grumbled. Didn't that last bit of nastiness happen on one of those? You Egyptians have an unhealthy obsession with equinoxes. Amos gave me a stern look.
Sadie, as I'm sure you're aware, the equinox is a time of great magic significance, when day and night are equal. Besides, the autumn equinox marks the last day before darkness overtakes the light. It is the anniversary of Ra's retreat into the heavens. I feared that Apophis might make his move at that time. It's a most inauspicious day.
Inauspicious? I frowned. But inauspicious is bad. Why would they... Oh. I realized for the forces of chaos, our bad days must have been their good days. That meant they probably had a lot of good days. Amos leaned on his staff. His hair seemed to be turning grey before my eyes. I remembered Michel Desjardins, the last chief lector, and how quickly he had aged. I couldn't bear the idea of that happening to Amos.
We don't have the strength to defeat our enemies, he said. I will have to use other means.
Amos, no,
Zia said.
Please.
I wasn't sure what they were talking about. Zia sounded horrified, and anything that scared her, I didn't want to know about. Actually, I said, Carter and I have a plan.
I told them about our idea of using Apophis's own shadow against him. Perhaps saying this in front of Leonid was reckless, but he had risked his life to warn us about Sarah Jacobi's plans. He had trusted me. The least I could do was return the favour. When I finished explaining, Amos gazed at his map.
I've never heard of such magic, even if it's possible.
It is, I insisted. Why else would Apophis delay his doomsday attack so he could track down and destroy every scroll by this fellow Setna? Apophis is afraid we'll figure out the spell and stop him. Zia crossed her arms.
But you can't. You just said all copies were destroyed.
We'll ask Toth for help, I said. Carter's on his way there now, and in the meantime, I have an errand to run. I may be able to test our theory about shadows.
How?
Amos asked. I told him what I had in mind. He looked as if he wanted to object, but he must have seen the defiance in my eyes. We're related, after all. He knows how stubborn Canes can be when they set their minds to something.
Very well, he said. First, you must eat and rest. You can leave at dawn. Zia, I want you to go with her.
Zia looked startled.
Me? But I might... I mean, is it wise?
Again, I got the feeling I'd missed an important conversation. What had Amos and Zia been discussing?
You'll be fine, Amos assured her. Sadie will need your help, and I will arrange for someone else to watch Ra during the day.
She looked quite nervous, which wasn't like her. Zia and I had had our differences in the past, but she'd never been short of confidence. Now I almost felt worried for her. Cheer up, I told her. It'll be a laugh. Quick trip to the Netherworld, Fiery Lake of Doom. What could go wrong?
7. I get strangled by an old friend. So, yeah. Sadie goes off on a side adventure with some guy, leaving me to do the boring work of figuring out how to save the world. Why does this sound familiar? Oh, right. That's the way Sadie always is. If it's time to move forward, you can count on her to veer sideways on some ADHD tangent of her own. Why are you thanking me, Sadie? That wasn't a compliment. After the Brooklyn Academy dance, I was pretty miffed. Bad enough being forced to slow dance with Sadie's friend Lacey. But passing out on the dance floor, waking up with Lacey snoring in my armpit, and then finding out I'd missed visits from two gods? That was just embarrassing. After Sadie and the Russian guy left, I got our crew back to Brooklyn House. Walt was confused to see us so soon. I pulled him and Boss aside for a quick conference on the terrace. I explained what Sadie had told me about Shu, Anubis, and the Russian dude, Leonid. I'll take Freak to Memphis, I said. Be back as soon as I talk to Toth. I'm going with you, Walt said. Sadie had told me to take him along, of course, but looking at him now, I had second thoughts. Walt's cheeks were sunken. His eyes were glassy. I was alarmed by how much worse he looked since just yesterday. I know this is horrible, but I couldn't help thinking about Egyptian burial practices, how they'd pack a body with embalming salts to slowly dry it up from the inside. Walt looked like he'd been started on that process. Look, man, I said, Sadie asked me to keep you safe. She's worried about you. So am I. He clenched his jaw. If you plan on using a shadow for your spell, you'll have to capture it with that figurine. You'll need a sow. And I'm the best you've got. Unfortunately, Walt was right. Neither Sadie nor I had the skill to capture a shadow, if that was even possible. Only Walt had that kind of charm-making talent. All right, I muttered. Just keep your head down. I don't want my sister going nuclear on me. Bast poked Walt's arm, the way a cat might nudge a bug to see if it was still alive. She sniffed his hair.
Your aura is weak, Bast said, but you should be all right to travel. Try not to exert yourself. No magic unless absolutely necessary.
Walt rolled his eyes. Yes, mother. Bast seemed to like that.
I'll watch the other kittens, she promised. Initiates. You two be careful. I don't have much love for Torth, but I don't want you caught up in his problems. What problems? I asked. You'll see. Just come back to me. All this guard duty is cutting into my nap schedule.
She shooed us toward Freak's stable and headed back downstairs, muttering something about catnip. We hitched up the boat. Freak squawked and buzzed his wings, anxious to go. He looked like he'd gotten a good rest. Besides, he knew that a journey meant more frozen turkeys for him. Soon, we were flying over the East River. Our ride through the Duat seemed bumpier than usual, like airplane turbulence, except with ghostly wailing and heavy fog. I was glad I'd had a light dinner. My stomach churned. The boat shuddered as Freak brought us out of the Duat. Below us spread a different nighttime landscape, the lights of Memphis, Tennessee, curving along the banks of the Mississippi River. On the shoreline rose a glassy black pyramid, an abandoned sports arena that Toth had appropriated for his home. Bursts of multicolored light peppered the air, reflections rippling across the pyramid. At first I thought Toth was hosting a fireworks exhibition. Then I realized his pyramid was under attack. Clambering up the sides was a gruesome assortment of demons. Humanoid figures with chicken feet or paws or insect legs. Some had fur. Some had scales or shells like tortoises. Instead of heads, many had weapons or tools sprouting from their necks. Hammers, swords, axes, chainsaws, even a few screwdrivers. At least 100 demons were climbing toward the top, digging their claws into the seams of the glass. Some tried to smash their way through, but wherever they struck, the pyramid flickered with blue light, repelling their attacks. Winged demons swirled through the air, screeching and diving at a small group of defenders. Toth stood at the peak. He looked like a scruffy college lab assistant in a white medical coat, jeans, and t-shirt, a day-old beard, and wild Einstein hair. Which doesn't sound very intimidating, but you should see him in combat. He threw glowing hieroglyphs like grenades, causing iridescent explosions all around him. Meanwhile, his assistants, a troop of baboons and long-beaked birds called ibises, engaged the enemy. The baboons slammed basketballs into the demons, sending them toppling back down the pyramid. The ibises ran between the monster's legs, jabbing their beaks in the most sensitive places they could find. As we flew closer, I lowered my vision into the Duat. The scene there was even scarier. The demons were connected by red coils of energy that formed one massive translucent serpent. The monster encircled the entire pyramid. At the top, Toth shone in his ancient form, a giant, white-kilted man with the head of an ibis, hurling bolts of energy at his enemies. Walt whistled. How can the mortals not notice a battle like that? I wasn't sure, but I remembered some of the recent disaster news. Huge storms had been causing floods all along the Mississippi River, including here in Memphis. Hundreds of people had been displaced. Magicians might be able to see what was really happening, but any regular mortals still in the city probably thought this was just a major thunderstorm. "I'll help Toth," I said. "You stay in the boat." "No," Walt said. "Boss said I should use magic only in an emergency. This qualifies." I knew Sadie would kill me if I let Walt get hurt. On the other hand, Walt's tone told me he wasn't going to back down. He can be almost as stubborn as my sister when he wants to be. "Fine," I said. "Hold on." A year ago, if I'd faced a fight like this, I would have curled into a ball and tried to hide. Even our battle at the Red Pyramid last Christmas seemed minor compared to dive-bombing an army of demons with no backup except one sick guy and a slightly dysfunctional griffin. But a lot had happened in the past year. Now this was just another bad day in the life of the Kane family. Freak came screaming down out of the night sky and banked hard to the right, shooting across the side of the pyramid. He gulped down smaller demons and shredded the larger ones with his buzzsaw wings. Some that survived got run over by our boat. As Freak began to climb again, Walt and I jumped out, scrambling for footing on the glassy slope. Walt threw an amulet. In a flash of light, a golden sphinx appeared, with a lion's body and the head of a woman. After our experience at the Dallas Museum, I didn't much care for sphinxes, but thankfully this one was on our side. Walt jumped on its back and rode into battle. The sphinx snarled and pounced on a reptilian demon, tearing it to pieces. Other monsters scattered. I couldn't blame them. A massive gold lion would have been scary enough, but the growling woman's head made it even more horrifying, with merciless emerald eyes, a shining Egyptian crown, and a fanged mouth with way too much lipstick. As for me, I summoned my Hepesh from the Duat. I called on the power of Horus, and the glowing blue avatar of the war god formed around me. Soon I was encased in a 20-foot-tall, hawk-headed apparition. I stepped forward. The avatar mirrored my movements. I swiped my sword at the nearest demons, and the avatar's massive glowing blade plowed them down like bowling pins. Two of the monsters actually had bowling pins for heads, so I guess that was appropriate. The baboons and ibises were slowly making headway against the surge of demons. Freak flew around the pyramid, snapping up winged demons or smacking them out of the air with his boat. Toth kept flinging hieroglyphic grenades. "Bloated!" he cried. The corresponding hieroglyph flew through the air, bursting against a demon's chest in a spray of light. Instantly, the demon swelled like a water balloon and rolled, screaming, down the pyramid. "Fly it!" Toth blasted another demon, who collapsed and shriveled into a monster-shaped doormat. "Intestinal problems!" Toth yelled. The poor demon who got zapped with that one turned green and doubled over. I waded through monsters, tossing them aside and slicing them to dust. Everything was going great until a winged demon did a kamikaze dive into my chest. I toppled backward, slamming against the pyramid with such force that I lost my concentration. My magical armor dissolved. I would have skidded all the way down the pyramid if the demon hadn't grabbed my throat and held me in place.
"Carter Kane," he hissed. "You are stupidly persistent."
I recognized that face, like an anatomy class cadaver with muscle and sinew but no skin. His lidless eyes glowed red. His fangs were bared in a murderous grin.
"You," I grunted.
"Yes,"
the demon chuckled, his claws tightening around my neck.
"Me."
Face of horror. Seth's lieutenant from the Red Pyramid and the secret mouthpiece of Apophis. We'd killed him in the shadow of the Washington Monument, but I guess that didn't mean anything. Now he was back, and judging by his rasping voice and glowing red eyes, he was still possessed by my least favorite snake. I didn't remember his being able to fly, but now leathery bat wings sprouted from his shoulders. He straddled me with his chicken legs, his hands digging into my windpipe. His breath smelled like fermented juice and skunk spray.
"I could have killed you many times,"
the demon said.
"But you interest me, Carter."
I tried to fight him off. My arms had turned to lead. I could barely hold my sword. Around us, the sounds of battle became muted. Freak flew overhead, but his wings beat so sluggishly I could actually see them. A hieroglyph exploded in slow motion like dye in water. Apophis was dragging me deeper into the Duat.
"I can feel your turmoil," said the demon. "Why do you fight this hopeless battle?
Don't you realize what will happen?
Images raced through my mind. I saw a landscape of shifting hills and fiery geysers. Winged demons turned in the sulfurous sky. Spirits of the dead skittered across the hills, wailing in desperation and clawing for handholds. They were all being pulled in the same direction, toward a blot of darkness on the horizon. Whatever it was, its gravity was as powerful as a black hole. It sucked in the spirits, bending the hills and plumes of fire toward it. Even the demons in the air struggled. Huddled in the shelter of a cliff, the glowing white form of a woman tried to anchor herself against the dark current. I wanted to cry. The woman was my mother. Other ghosts flew past her, wailing helplessly. My mom tried to reach out, but she couldn't save them. The scene shifted. I saw the Egyptian desert at the edge of Cairo under a blazing sun. Suddenly the sands erupted. A giant red serpent rose from the underworld. He lunged at the sky and somehow, impossibly, swallowed the sun in a single gulp. The world darkened. Frost spread across the dunes. Cracks appeared in the ground. The landscape crumbled. Whole neighborhoods of Cairo sank into chasms. A red ocean of chaos swelled up from the Nile, dissolving the city and desert, washing away pyramids that had stood for millennia. Soon there was nothing left but a boiling sea under a starless black sky.
No gods can save you, Carter.
Apophis sounded almost sympathetic.
This fate has been decreed since the beginning of time. Yield to me, and I will spare you and those you love. You will ride the sea of chaos. You will be master of your own destiny.
I saw an island floating across the boiling ocean, a small patch of green earth like an oasis. My family and I could be together on that island. We could survive. We could have anything we wanted just by imagining it. Death would mean nothing.
All I ask is a token of goodwill.
Apophis urged,
give me Ra. I know you hate him. He represents everything that is wrong with your mortal world. He has grown senile, rotten, weak, and useless. Surrender him to me. I will spare you. Think on this, Carter Kane. Have the gods promised you anything as fair?
The visions faded. Face of Horror grinned down at me, but suddenly his features contorted in pain. A fiery hieroglyph burned across his forehead, the symbol for desiccate, and the demon crumbled to dust. I gasped for breath. My throat felt like it was packed with hot coals. Toth stood over me, looking grim and tired. His eyes swirled with kaleidoscopic colors like portals to another world.
Carter Kane.
He offered me a hand and helped me up. All the other demons were gone. Walt stood at the peak of the pyramid with the baboons and the ibises, who were climbing over the golden sphinx lady like she was a merry-go-round animal. Free covered nearby, looking full and happy from eating so many demons.
You shouldn't have come,
Toth chided. He brushed demon dust off his t-shirt, which had a flaming heart logo and the words House of Blues.
It was much too dangerous, especially for Walt.
You're welcome, I croaked. It looked like you needed help.
The demons?
Toth waved dismissively.
They'll be back just before sunrise. They've been attacking every 6 hours for the past week. Quite annoying.
Every 6 hours? I tried to imagine that. If Toth had been fighting off an army like that several times a day for a week, I didn't see how even a god could have that much power. Where are the other gods? I asked. Shouldn't they be helping you? Toth wrinkled his nose as if he smelled a demon with intestinal problems.
Perhaps you and Walt should come inside. Now that you're here, we have a lot to talk about.
I'll say this for Toth. He knew how to decorate a pyramid. The former arena's basketball court was still there, no doubt so his baboons could play. Baboons love basketball. The jumbotron still hung from the ceiling, flashing a series of hieroglyphs that announced things like, "Go team! Defense!" and "Toth 25, Demon 0" in ancient Egyptian. The stadium seating had been replaced with a series of tiered balconies. Some were lined with computer stations, like mission control for a rocket launch. Others had chemistry tables cluttered with beakers, Bunsen burners, vials of smoking goo, jars of pickled organs, and stranger things. The nosebleed section was devoted to scroll cubbies, a library easily as big as the one in the first gnome. And behind the left backboard rose a 3-story-tall whiteboard covered in computations and hieroglyphs. Hanging from the girders, instead of championship banners and retired numbers, were black tapestries embroidered with gold incantations. Courtside was Toth's living area. A freestanding gourmet kitchen, a plush collection of couches and easy chairs, piles of books, buckets of Legos and Tinker toys, a dozen flat-screen TVs showing different news programs and documentaries, and a small forest of electric guitars and amplifiers. Everything a scatterbrained god needed to be able to do 20 things at once. Toth's baboons took Freak into the locker room to groom him and let him rest. I think they were worried he might eat the ibises, since they did look a bit like turkeys. Toth turned to Walt and me, looking us over critically.
You need rest. Then I'll fix you some dinner.
We don't have time, I said. We have to...
Carter Kane, Toth scolded. You've just battled Apophis, gotten the Horus knocked out of you, been dragged through the Duat and half-strangled. You're no good to anyone until you get some sleep.
I wanted to protest, but Toth pressed his hand to my forehead. Weariness washed over me.
Rest, Toth insisted.
I collapsed on the nearest couch. I'm not sure how long I slept, but Walt got up first. When I woke, he and Toth were deep in conversation.
No, Toth said. It's never been done, and I'm afraid you don't have time.
He faltered when he noticed me sitting up.
Ah, good, Carter, you're awake.
What did I miss?
Nothing, he said, a little too cheerily. Come and eat.
His kitchen counter was laden with fresh-cut brisket, sausage, ribs, and cornbread, plus an industrial-sized dispenser of iced tea. Toth had once told me that barbecue was a form of magic, and I guess he was right. The smell of food made me temporarily forget my troubles. I scarfed down a brisket sandwich and drank 2 glasses of tea. Walt nibbled on a rib, but he didn't seem to have much of an appetite. Meanwhile, Toth picked up a Gibson guitar. He struck a power chord that shook the arena floor. He'd gotten better since I'd last heard him. The chord actually sounded like a chord, not like a mountain goat being tortured. I gestured around with a piece of cornbread. This place is looking good. Toth chuckled.
Better than my last headquarters, huh?
The first time Sadie and I had crossed paths with the god of knowledge, he'd been holed up at a local university campus. He had tested our worth by sending us on a quest to trash Elvis Presley's house. Long story. But hopefully, we were past the testing phase now. I preferred hanging out courtside, eating barbecue. Then I thought about the visions Face of Horror had shown me. My mother in danger, a darkness swallowing the souls of the dead, the world dissolving in a sea of chaos, except for one small island floating across the waves. The memory kind of killed my appetite. So, I pushed my plate away. Tell me about the demon attacks. And what were you saying to Walt? Walt stared at his half-eaten pork rib. Toth strummed a minor chord.
Where to start?
The attacks began 7 days ago. I'm cut off from the other gods. They haven't come to my rescue, I imagine, because they're having similar problems. Divide and conquer. Apophis understands that basic military principle. Even if my brethren could help me, well, they have other priorities. Ra was recently brought back, as you may recall.
Toth gave me a hard look, like I was an equation he couldn't balance.
The sun god must be guarded on his nightly journey. That takes a lot of god power. My shoulders sagged. I didn't need one more thing to feel guilty about. I also didn't think it was fair of Toth to act so critical of me. Toth had been on our side, more or less, about bringing back the sun god. Maybe 7 days of demon attacks had started to change his mind.
Can't you just leave? I asked.
Toth shook his head. Perhaps you can't see so deeply into the Duat, but the power of Apophis has completely encircled this pyramid. I am quite stuck. I gazed up at the arena's ceiling, which suddenly seemed much lower.
Which means we're stuck, too?
Toth waved aside the question. You should be able to pass back through. The serpent's net is designed to catch a god. You and Walt aren't large or important enough to be caught. I wondered if that were true, or if Apophis was allowing me to come and go. To have the choice of surrendering Ra.
You interest me, Carter, Apophis had said. Yield to me, and I will spare you.
I took a deep breath. But, Toth, if you're on your own, I mean, how much longer can you last? The god brushed at his lab coat, which was covered with scribbles in a dozen languages. The word time fluttered off his sleeve. Toth caught it, and suddenly he was checking a gold pocket watch.
Let's see. Judging from the weakening of the pyramid's defenses, and the rate at which my power is being expended, I'd say I could withstand 9 more attacks.
Or just over 2 days. Which would take us to dawn on the equinox.
Huh. That can't be a coincidence.
And then? Walt asked.
Then my pyramid will be breached. My minions will be killed. I'm guessing doomsday will happen all over, in fact. The fall equinox would be a sensible time for Apophis to rise. He'll probably cast me into the abyss, or possibly scatter my essence across the universe in a billion pieces. The physics of a god's death.
His pocket watch turned into a pen. He scribbled something on the neck of his guitar.
That would make an excellent research paper.
Toth, Walt prompted, tell Carter what you told me about why you're being targeted.
I thought that was obvious.
Toth said, Apophis wants to distract me from helping you. That is why you've come, isn't it, to find out about the serpent's shadow?
For a moment, I was too stunned to speak. How did you know?
Please.
Toth played a Jimi Hendrix riff, then set down his guitar.
I am the god of knowledge. I knew sooner or later you'd come to the conclusion that your only hope of victory was a shadow execration.
A shadow execration, I repeated. That's an actual spell with an actual name? It could work?
In theory.
And you didn't volunteer this information. Why?
Toth snorted. Knowledge of any value can't be given. It must be sought and earned. You're a teacher now, Carter. You should know this.
I wasn't sure whether to strangle him or hug him. So I'm seeking the knowledge. I'm earning the knowledge. How do I defeat Apophis?
I'm so glad you asked.
Toth beamed at me with his multicolored eyes.
Unfortunately, I can't tell you.
I glanced at Walt. Do you want to kill him, or should I?
Now, Toth said. I can guide you a little, but you'll have to connect the freckles, as they say.
Dots, I said.
Yes, he said. You're on the right track. The should could be used to destroy a god, or even Apophis himself. And yes, like all sentient beings, Apophis has a shadow, though he keeps that part of his soul well hidden and well guarded.
So where is it? I asked. How do we use it?
Toth spread his hands. The second question I can't answer. The first question I'm not allowed to answer.
Walt shoved his plate aside. I've been trying to get it out of him, Carter. For a god of knowledge, he isn't very helpful.
Come on, Toth, I said. Can't we do a quest for you or something? Couldn't we blow up Elvis's house again?
Tempting, the god said.
But you must understand, giving a mortal the location of an immortal shadow, even Apophis's, would be a grave crime. The other gods already think I'm a sellout. Over the centuries, I've divulged too many secrets to mankind. I taught you the art of writing. I taught you magic and founded the House of Life.
Which is why magicians still honor you, I said. So help us one more time.
And give humans knowledge that could be used to destroy the gods?
Toth sighed.
Can you understand why my brethren might object to such a thing?
I clenched my fists. I thought about my mother's spirit huddling beneath a cliff, fighting to stay put. The dark force had to be Apophis's shadow. Apophis had shown me that vision to make me despair. As his power grew, his shadow grew stronger too. It was pulling in the spirits of the dead, consuming them. I could guess the shadow was somewhere in the Duat, but that didn't help. It was like saying somewhere in the Pacific Ocean. The Duat was huge. I glared at Toth. Your other option is not to help us and let Apophis destroy the world.
Point taken, he admitted, which is why I'm still talking to you. There is a way you could find the shadow's location. Long ago, when I was young and naive, I wrote a book, a field study of sorts, called The Book of Toth.
Catchy name, Walt muttered.
I thought so, Toth said. At any rate, it described every form and disguise each god can take, their most secret hiding places, all sorts of embarrassing details.
Including how to find their shadows? I asked.
No comment. At any rate, I never meant for humans to read the book, but it was stolen in ancient times by a crafty magician.
Where is it now? I asked. Then I held up my hands.
Wait. Let me guess. You can't tell us.
Honestly, I don't know, Toth said. This crafty magician hid the book. Fortunately, he died before he could take full advantage of it, but he did use its knowledge to formulate a number of spells, including the shadow execration. He wrote down his thoughts in a special variation of the Book of Overcoming Apophis. "Setna," I said. "That's the magician you're talking about."
"Indeed."
His spell was only theoretical, of course. Even I never had that knowledge. And as you know, all copies of his scroll have now been destroyed. "So it's hopeless," I said. "Dead end."
"Oh, no," Toth said. "You could ask Setna himself. He wrote the spell. He hid the Book of Toth that, may or may not describe the shadow's location. If he were so inclined, he could help you."
"But hasn't Setna been dead for thousands of years?"
Toth grinned. "Yes. And that's only the first problem."
Toth told us about Setna, who'd apparently been pretty famous in ancient Egypt, like Robin Hood, Merlin, and Attila the Hun rolled into one. The more I heard, the less I wanted to meet him.
"He was a pathological liar," Toth said. "A scoundrel, a traitor, a thief, and a brilliant magician. He prided himself on stealing books of knowledge, including mine. He battled monsters, adventured in the Duat, conquered gods, and broke into sacred tombs. He created curses that couldn't be lifted and unearthed secrets that should have stayed buried. He was quite the evil genius."
Walt tugged at his amulets.
"Sounds like you admire him."
The god gave him a sidelong grin.
"Well, I appreciate the pursuit of knowledge, but I couldn't endorse Setna's methods. He'd stop at nothing to possess the secrets of the universe. He wanted to be a god, you see. Not the eye of a god. A full-fledged immortal."
"Which is impossible," I guessed.
"Hard, not impossible," Toth said. "Imhotep, the first mortal magician, he was made a god after his death."
Toth turned toward his computers.
"That reminds me, I haven't seen Imhotep in millennia. I wonder what he's up to. Perhaps I should Google him."
"Toth," Walt said, "concentrate."
"Right. So, Setna, he created this spell for destroying any being, even a god. I could never endorse such knowledge falling into the hands of a mortal, but hypothetically speaking, if you needed the spell to defeat Apophis, you might be able to convince Setna to teach you the enchantment and lead you to the shadow of Apophis."
"Except Setna's dead," I said. "We keep coming back to that." Walt sat up.
"Unless... you're suggesting we find his spirit in the underworld."
"But if Setna was so evil, wouldn't Osiris have condemned him in the Hall of Judgment? Amit would have eaten his heart, and he would have ceased to exist."
"Normally, yes," Toth said. "But Setna is a special case. He's quite persuasive. Even before the Court of the Underworld, he was able to, manipulate the legal system. Many times Osiris sentenced him to oblivion, but Setna always managed to evade punishment. He got a lighter sentence, or he made a plea bargain, or he simply escaped. He's managed to survive, as a spirit at least, all these eons."
Toth turned his swirling eyes toward me.
"But recently, Carter Kane, your father became Osiris. He's been cracking down on rebellious ghosts, trying to restore Maat to the underworld. The next time the sun sets, approximately 14 hours from now, Setna is scheduled for a new trial. He will come before your father, and this time, my dad won't let him go."
I felt like the demon's hands were closing around my throat again. My father was fair, but stern. He didn't take excuses from anyone. All the years we'd traveled together, I could never even get away with leaving my shirt untucked. If Setna was as bad as Toth said, my father would show him no mercy. He'd toss this guy's heart to Amit the Devourer like it was a doggy biscuit. Walt's eyes shone with excitement. He looked more animated than I'd seen him in a long time. "We can plead with your dad," he said. "We can get Setna's trial delayed, or ask for a reduced sentence in exchange for Setna's help. The laws of the underworld allow that." I frowned. "How do you know so much about dead people's court?" I regretted saying that immediately. I realized that he'd probably been preparing himself to face that courtroom. Maybe that's what he'd been discussing with Toth earlier. "I'm afraid you don't have much time," Toth had said. "Sorry, man," I said. "It's okay," Walt said. "But we have to try. If we can convince your dad to spare Setna," Toth laughed.
"That would be amusing, wouldn't it? If Setna got off yet again because his evil ways were the only thing that might save the world."
"Hilarious," I said. The brisket sandwich wasn't sitting well in my stomach. "So you're suggesting we go to my father's court and try to save the ghost of an evil, psychotic magician. Then we ask this ghost to lead us to Apophis's shadow and teach us how to destroy it, while trusting that he won't escape, kill us, or betray us to the enemy." Toth nodded enthusiastically.
"You have to be crazy. I certainly hope you are."
I took a deep breath. "I guess I'm crazy."
"Excellent," Toth cheered. "One more thing, Carter. To make this work, you'll need Walt's help, but he's running out of time. His only chance..."
"It's fine," Walt snapped. "I'll tell him myself." Before I could ask what he meant, the overtime buzzer blared from the arena speakers.
"It's almost dawn," Toth said. "You two had better leave before the demons return. Good luck. And by all means, give Setna my regards. If you live that long, of course."
8. My sister, the flower pot. The ride back wasn't fun. Walt and I held on to the boat while our teeth chattered and our eyes jiggled. The magic fog had turned the color of blood. Ghostly voices whispered angrily, like they'd decided to riot and loot the ethereal world. Sooner than I expected, Freak pushed his way out of the Duat. We found ourselves over the New Jersey dockyards, our boat trailing steam as Freak bobbed wearily through the air. In the distance, the Manhattan skyline gleamed gold in the sunrise. Walt and I hadn't spoken during the trip. The Duat tends to put a damper on conversation. Now he regarded me sheepishly.
"I should explain some things," he said. I can't pretend I wasn't curious.
As his sickness had progressed, Walt had gotten more and more secretive. I wondered what he'd been talking about with Toth. But it wasn't my business. After Sadie learned my secret name last spring and gotten a free tour of my innermost thoughts, I'd become sensitive about respecting people's privacy. "Look, Walt, it's your personal life," I said. "If you don't want to tell..."
"But it's not just personal. You need to know what's going on. I won't be around much longer."
I gazed down at the harbor, the Statue of Liberty passing below us. For months, I'd known Walt was dying. It never got easier to accept. I remembered what Apophis had said at the Dallas Museum. Walt wouldn't live long enough to see the end of the world.
"Are you sure?" I asked. "Isn't there some way..."
"Anubis is sure," he said. "I've got until sunset tomorrow, at the very latest." I didn't want to hear another impossible deadline. By sunset tonight, we had to save the ghost of an evil magician. By sunset tomorrow, Walt would die. And the sunrise after that, if we were really lucky, we could look forward to doomsday. I never liked being thwarted. Whenever I felt like something was impossible, I usually tried even harder out of sheer stubbornness. But at this point, I felt like Apophis was having a good laugh at my expense.
"Oh, you're not a quitter,"
he seemed to be asking.
"How about now? What if we give you a few more impossible tasks? Are you a quitter now?"
Anger made a small, hard knot in my gut. I kicked the side of the boat and nearly broke my foot. Walt blinked. "Carter, it's..."
"Don't say it's all right," I snapped. "It's not all right."
I wasn't mad at him. I was mad at the unfairness of his stupid curse and the fact that I kept failing people who depended on me. My parents had died to give Sadie and me a chance to save the world, which we were close to botching. In Dallas, dozens of good magicians had died because they tried to help me. Now, we were about to lose Walt. Sure, he was important to Sadie, but I relied on him just as much. Walt was my unofficial lieutenant at Brooklyn House. The other kids listened to him. He was a calming presence in every crisis, the deciding vote in every debate. I could trust him with any secret. And even with making the execration statue of Apophis, which I couldn't tell my uncle about. If Walt died, I won't let it happen, I said. I refuse. Wild thoughts ran through my mind. Maybe Anubis was lying to Walt about his imminent death, trying to push Walt away from Sadie. Okay, unlikely. Sadie wasn't that much of a prize. "Yeah, Sadie, I really said that. Just checking to see if you were still paying attention." Maybe Walt could beat the odds. People survived cancer miraculously. Why not ancient curses? Maybe we could put him in suspended animation like Iskandar had done for Zia until we found an antidote. Sure, his family had been searching for a cure unsuccessfully for centuries. Jazz, our best healer, had tried everything with no luck. But maybe we'd overlooked something.
"Carter," Walt said, "will you let me finish? We've got to make plans."
"How can you be so calm?" I demanded.
Walt fingered his Shen necklace, the twin of the one he'd given Sadie. "I've known about my curse for years. I won't let it stop me from doing what I need to. One way or another, I'm going to help you beat Apophis."
"How?" I said.
"You just told me..."
"Anubis has an idea," Walt said. "He's been helping me make sense of my powers."
"You mean..."
I glanced at Walt's hands. Several times I'd seen him turn objects to ashes simply by touching them, the way he'd done to that cryosphinx in Dallas. The power didn't come from any of his magic items. None of us understood it, and as Walt's disease progressed, he seemed less and less able to control it, which made me think twice about giving the guy a high five. Walt flexed his fingers.
"Anubis thinks he understands why I have that ability. And there's more. He thinks there might be a way to extend my life."
That was such good news that I let out a shaky laugh.
"Why didn't you say so? He can cure you?"
"No," Walt said, "not a cure. And it's risky. It's never been done before."
"That's what you were talking to Toth about."
Walt nodded. "Even if Anubis's plan works, there could be side effects. You might not like it." He lowered his voice. "Sadie might not like it." Unfortunately, I had a vivid imagination. I envisioned Walt turning into some sort of undead creature, a withered mummy, a ghostly ba, or a disfigured demon. In Egyptian magic, side effects could be pretty extreme. I tried not to let my emotions show. "We want you to live. Don't worry about Sadie." I could tell from Walt's eyes that he worried about Sadie a lot. Seriously, what did he see in my sister?
"Stop hitting me, Sadie. I'm just being honest."
Walt flexed his fingers. Maybe it was my imagination, but I thought I detected wisps of gray steam curling from his hands, as if just talking about his strange power had made it turn active.
"I won't make the decision yet," Walt said. "Not until I'm on my last breath. I want to talk to Sadie first. Explain to her."
He rested his hand on the side of the boat. That was a mistake. The woven reeds turned gray under his touch.
"Walt, stop!"
I yelped. He jerked his hand away, but it was too late. The boat crumbled to ashes. We lunged for the ropes.